It's all about, like, Frank Zappa said he didn't care about cosmic debris and he was always making fun of these things. But actually, once I read, Gail claimed she heard voices.
Yes.
So, and he himself had some weird experiences. So, it's like you said before, he was very careful what he put out because he knew he could. That he could not put himself like that in.
Yeah, he wanted to appear as serious as possible since he was presenting such an absurd landscape of sound. Now, he, in the Bob Marshall interview, this is brought up. And Bob asked him, why in this 1969 interview, when you asked about being psychic, you said no comment. And he said, well, you don't talk about that kind of stuff with someone who wouldn't understand it. So he admitted right there that he's familiar with the psychic world or whatever he meant by it, and he wasn't going to talk about it to a teenager, you know, for a pop magazine. Maybe it was
And the ideas that Ion talks about make us wonder and see, for example, when Frank Zappa says he never really studied composition, but he's doing these very, very complex pieces.
By synesthesia, he mixes his senses. That's where he looked different. He just knew to not limit it to sound. Remember when he was describing how he instructed the symphony players to do these crazy things?
Yes.
Yeah, as long as he thought about, I'm not limited to sound, I can include other stuff. It didn't necessarily mean it was complicated 16, 18 rhythms or something. He just brought in other sensory modalities, which created humor and the sense of the absurd. He didn't limit himself to sound expertise, even though he could do it.
Yes, but it's... I think he's like a phenomenon.
Yeah.
And it makes one wonder about many, many different aspects of whether we really, how do we really perceive, how do we really create? Because there are some phenomena, some mystery men artists that claim they are told to do things, and I can illustrate this with the painter we discovered last week, Augustin Lesage.
Augustin Lesage, yeah, L-E-S-A-G-E.
Yeah, he started working in a coal mine when he was a child, because Ion says we need carbon. But they will start at 3 a.m. in the morning, work 12 hours, and they use physical force. They were in the mines, in the darkness, alone, very deep, down in the earth. And when he was 35, he heard a voice that said, you're going to be a painter. And this thing repeated every day. And he was a very simple man, and he started to think, maybe I'm crazy. And he went to the cafe or bar, bistro, whatever, after work, and asked one of his companions, do you think spirits can talk? And he told him, yes, that's called spiritism. There are people who can do that. So he went to find a group and went to a seance. And during the seance, these spirits told him exactly to buy a canvas with these measurements and very specific names of paintings, like Brown Sienna. You know, the paintings, they always have very specific names. So he was impressed. He said, okay, I'll do what they say, and he started painting. But when he got the canvas, it was like real big, like 3 meters. Really big. Mm. He could not even... he had no idea what he was doing. And he was sort of scared just to see this big canvas. But the voices said, don't worry, we'll tell you what to do. Just do it. So he started painting after these very long hours in the mine. After 12 hours of very hard physical work, he started painting in the night. Very wow. complex paintings.
Yes.
They are very symmetrical. And after a while, somebody was impressed by that, and he became his agent, but he said, I would like to have some scientists studying your work because this is not normal. Just to have the physical force to do that after such hard work is already amazing. And then the complexity of what he was painting without... He never had
any training,
drawn or painted.
Yeah, he didn't know anything about it.
And so, because the paintings were symmetrical, the scientist said, okay, we're going to cover half of the painting. You paint only the half, and then you do the other half. We'll see if what you claim is true, if they're telling you what paint they know. And he did. He could paint without seeing the cover half. He could paint the other exact mirror image of this complex painting.
Yeah, very detailed.
Yes, amazing. It's something we could do now with a computer, but without a computer. And he was not even measuring or doing any preparation work or anything. He just did it direct on the
canvas. Wow.
So they said, well, we cannot explain this. The scientist said, mystery landscape, cosmic debris, weird stuff.
Yes.
But like that, there are many different works of art that have like many layers of meaning, very, very complex. People can study these works their whole lives. And it's like, how could a human put all that information in that work, like in the Bible, in Finnegan's Wake, in the work of Nostradamus, the paintings of Michelangelo and Leonardo. They're like people studying them for years. And
they studied him? Did you say they studied him for years?
Well, the works.
The works, yeah.
Like you've been studying Finnegan's Wake for many years.
Yes.
And Ion said they work together with this artist, and many times the artists themselves don't know what they're doing.
Okay,
because we are confronted with the mystery landscape, with talking to Ion, that's why I would like to talk about cosmic debris.
Right. So he worked in the mines for 25 years or something, and then that led to the control that controls control came in and started talking to him. I worked in the intellectual mines, researching all these geniuses. And that led to Ion. That's the parallel there. Now, I'm just showing Carolyn some of the paintings. Now, if you look, you take that painting, Carolyn, they would cover up, the scientists would cover up that half, right?
And they're like 9 meters big or 8 or very big format.
Big what?
They're very big paintings.
Yeah, these are huge, Carolyn. They'd cover up that half and ask him to paint that without seeing it. And then he would paint the exact mirror of it by being told by the voice what to do. But these very complex situations, he would able to do the task. There, without knowing what was on that side. There he seems to see. But look how big the canvas is. So I just wanted to explain. I don't know if she was getting that. So you want to show...
Usually we talk about things that show up like that. We usually don't prepare, like, we are going to talk quick about this. Like...
That showed up this week. You never heard of the guy.
No, for some reason I think it's a way of showing... Because I was very impressed that you said you didn't know all this information is on the... On the drawing of the column, you know, of the product.
Yes.
For example, you turn the bottle upside down and you see these three faces with the crown of the flower of leaves and they're on. These same sort of. Cartoon face of the king is behind King Frank in one of his most famous paintings. It's like a part of the brocade of the clothes on the wall, the tapestry on the wall. And I've seen that painting many times before, but then until I saw it again, I really saw. So there are many things put, like, on the environment. The whole environment is like a big creation of many layers of meaning.
Yes.
And that's what McLuhan is...
Showing.
Decoding.
Decoding,
showing.
Yeah. Decoding, yes.
He also talks a lot about the code breakers.
Yes.
Because like Ion says... We put a lot of things on the environment to remember. And we might not be aware, but all these things, all these layers of meaning are there. And it's really amazing how the medium is the message. It's really the synthesis of the whole evolution of humankind since the fall.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
It's all about what was the message? What was the medium?
Yeah.
Everything was evolving to get back to talk with the non-physical.
Yes. Yeah, the medium.
And the situation is so amazing is that how could you understand this without Joyce and McLuhan?
Yes.
It will make no sense.
So, I have a review here. Okay, was there another point you were making? So Zappa had something communicating to him all the time. He would go on vacation and just more songs were coming through him. So he couldn't stop. So you would say that was himself talking to himself. But the way he was secretive about talking about the psychic, for example, he has in his questionnaire when you want to become a member in the late 60s of the United Mutations, the group he formed, the United Mutations, like fan club.
You see, there is a cue to the mutation of the drops of the blood.
Right. United Mutations. And he asked the question, is God ESP? That's a very good question. Garrett Dean used to say that a spiritual experience or ego death or something like that, a transcendent experience, was a psychic event that happened to you. It'd be like an anomaly. And it'd probably have to be a pretty big one or a deep one. But he saw that the revelation was having one of these experiences. So to actually experience deep ESP, is that God? Is that something that makes you... diminish your own particular desires. Now, Ion says that's not wise, but the tradition was to get rid of your ego and become humble. And that a psychic experience might do that to you. At least the thoughts that you were focused on and the desires you focus on would be displaced, and you'd have a new motivation. So is God ESP? That's a really important question. Most people don't think if they have ESP, that it's God. So it means a psychic experience is what gets translated into God, like the burning bush thing that Moses had. So that's why he wouldn't talk to a teenage journalist about the psychic. He would have to explain some of his deepest thoughts. So this is shown in his music and how he made it. So with that in mind, let me read a review of Waka Jawaka, which is the other album that came out the same time as Grand Wazoo. And these were made while Frank was recuperating from his accident in December 1971. So let's just see what this reviewer says. I think it is pretty good. So this guy is called Rob Houghton, and this is a review in Rolling Stone magazine. He says, although it doesn't happen often, whenever Frank Zappa goes about the task of purging himself of his normal ration of acrimony, contempt, bile, and phlegm, he sometimes comes forth with an album that is every bit the musical experience that he always claimed he could produce. So he's saying he thinks Frank gets rid of his normal acrimony, contempt, bile, and phlegm. So then Mr. Houghton says, with the exception of the astonishing work he and his musicians did on Hot Rats a couple of years ago, much of Zappa's musical output has been too malnourished to support his artistic pretensions. Now, that's not true, but people couldn't hear what he was doing back then. You know, we go back to stuff that was came out before Hot Rats. That's pretty awesome. But this is the Rolling Stone party line. Frank used to complain about Rolling Stone that they never gave him a decent review. So this guy is saying, but they couldn't deny Waka Jawaka. His excursions into jazz with the Mothers of Invention were never more than pale imitations of Miles Davis and Ornette Coleman, overlaid with effects copped from Edgar Varèse, and most of his serious compositions contain large helpings from the glut of modern music. Originality has never been Zappa's strong point. Now, isn't that nuts? It's not the content. They're missing the collage effect that Frank was communicating, the invisible landscapes, in your normal TV environment. Sometimes people hear Zappa's music and they always sounds like, you know, the soundtrack to a movie. But he was showing them the multi-textures in the Quadrophenic Media early Android meme, but people couldn't see that effect. They only saw, well, that sounds familiar. He's not original. He got that from Stravinsky. He didn't see what Zappa was collaging. Basically, it was high art and low art. Highbrow music, lowbrow.
Yes. Yes, and the thing with the soundtrack, the film soundtrack, according to Ion, everything we do is actually record, and it's like reality is the muffin studio. We are all recording this experience, and this experience, what we call reality, is not even really understood. It's a kind of internal simulation that is made by our brain from the frequencies
around
that we get. But there is a wide range of frequencies and radiation and stuff. We don't even know about that. We cannot. It's beyond the range of what we can perceive. So our perception of reality is false. But
is what cold? What did you say? Is gold?
It's not the real reality. We just perceive
a distortion.
A very small range of the whole wide frequency that exists.
So this guy, this reviewer, is only seeing a small part of Zappa's method. He's not getting the... Remember Zappa said, well, I read it, you know, a couple weeks ago, what you hear is not what I'm about. I'm about what you can't hear. He says the album.
Wow.
Yeah, it might have been the week you were missing. I was talking to Bert about it. But yeah, he said, actually, what you hear in the album is not what it's about. See, so he was working on the level of the new medium, the new invisible environment, not just with sound. And that's exactly what McLuhan was trying to show. So if that's a new statement for you, we'll have to try to find that someday, read it to you. But yeah, he said it right there.
That's amazing, because actually not only his work is about what we cannot hear, but the whole of reality. I mean, we don't really know how the brain works, perception, what is matter, what is what we call space-time, and how the body really works and the real functions. For example, Ian is telling us about what's the real function of the hypothalamus and the heart and the different substances that are secreted.
Chromosome 14.
We still don't know. Dr. Dean knows a little more than the rest of humanity.
Right, and the image that we have of the brain, and that we have a brain, that may not be accurate to what is actually creating consciousness or feeling. It's not just stuck in the brain. That's another part. So what
can scientists explain? We perceive, in order to survive and procreate, that's the
mantra.
We evolved to, evolution was, the goal was just to survive. But we know the goal was actually to
not worry about survival. The goal was not to worry about survival.
Yes, because if we go back to activating all these, what they call the trash DNA, and to change, the liquid of the heart will become heavier, and all these changes that are happening in the body, then the goal of evolution was not what most scientists think.
That's right. So.
And it's not about that, or maybe yes, it is adapting to the environment, but the environment is changing we have to engage the mystery landscape in order to make this new evolution. There is no other way.
And remembering.
Without.
Evolution and remembering. And he gets cheeky if you start using the word evolution too much, because it's not unfolding in a linear way or a progressive way.
Yes, because, that was the talk during the last century, so
yes.
Evolution. But somehow the body, the physical body, was not evolving.
Right. Okay, so let me continue the review. So the guy says originality has never been Zappa's strong point. So that's a silly statement. But it's a different kind of originality that Zappa was coming up with. So this particular album, called Waka Juwaka, and the band is called Hot Rats, Waka Juwaka-Hot Rats, while little more than a long, delayed extension of the original Hot Rats album, came out in 69, is one of Zappa's most enjoyable, less hyper-tense efforts. And while it may lack the tightness... What's that echo? Why am I getting an echo?
Maybe it's me.
Yeah, maybe you shifted something. Okay. This album is one of Zappa's most enjoyable, less hypertense efforts, and while it may lack the tightness, the rock-based energy of its predecessor, it contains some of the best material he's done in years. Waka Juwaka may well be something of a fence-mending job by Zappa after his execrable, which mainly means shitty, after his shitty work on 200 Motels, which has got to be one of the all-time attempts by a musician and composer to discredit himself. See how Rolling Stone talks about him? It's like Frank was offering the alternative to Rolling Stone. Rolling Stone was marketing the lower frequencies, the new mainstream of newness frequencies.
I think any musician would completely disagree with that person because the soundtrack of 200 Metals is really good. It's real music.
Yeah.
Not rock and roll.
So you're not agreeing with the reviewer?
No, I don't think anybody who really knows about music could say that. Like.
That's right. And this Rob Houghton, I don't recognize the name. He didn't go on to become a well-known critic. He's probably CIA. He just been brought in to smear Frank. Or some John Birch, extreme fascist kind of guy. But it's silly. So then he says, the musicians brought in for Waka to Waka are not the stellar personalities that graced the first Hot Rats album. Captain Beefheart and Sugarcane Harris are gone, replaced by newer faces that include Tony Duran on slide guitar, Sal Marquez on trumpets, and Don Preston on moog and piano. They comprise a tight, disciplined group. The first song is a 17-minute extravaganza called Big Swifty, which moves on the strength of Zappa's guitar and Marquez's horns through enough changes to add up to a solid modern jazz suite. It is something to appreciate, even though it could well be called second-rate Miles Davis, and is even leagues behind Weather Report's recent, quote, I sing the body electric, unquote. In inventiveness, it's way behind that, in inventiveness and power. And at only 17 minutes in length, Big Swifty seems rather lightweight for a full-side piece. But that's just quibbling. It's good. It stands up to repeated listenings and is, along with the title cut, one of the best things on the album. So I guess it took up the whole side, but it was only 17 minutes long. Side two has Your Mouth. Not Your Mouth, Roxy's. This is in quotes. It's Your Mouth. That's the title. A lapse back into Zappa's patented spitefulness. It's vapid and it is vapid and trite, a puerile exercise in sluggish swing. And then the next instrumental cut, whatever, piece. It just might be a one-shot deal. Now, that wouldn't mean anything to people then, but once you knew later the larger conceptual continuity of Zappa, then this statement is really important. It just might be a one-shot deal. It's good old mother's music, a chaotic arrangement of acoustic, slide, Hawaiian, and pedal steel guitars. Waka Jawaka, another song, rounds out the album with an 11-minute jazz improvisation. Maybe, and then the guy says, maybe Frank Zappa is just getting mellow for the first time in his career. Now, remember, Zappa becomes blatantly different within a year, you know. See, these guys are trying to put anthropomorphic aging trends on Zappa. He's just starting. He's going to have many monstrous forms he's going to take. So maybe Frank Zappa is just getting mellow for the first time in his career, or maybe it's just a phase. Either way, while Waka Jawaka may lack the brilliance of Hot Rats or the capacity for irritation that existed in some of the Mother's material, it's a distinctive album, which in his case is either a sign of maturity or evidence of exhaustion. They can't even sort of praise a work that Frank made without taking shots at him, which is what they used to do about McLuhan, too.
The battle.
Yeah, the battle for identity. Okay, now, do you have another point? What I want to do eventually, when you're finished saying whatever you want to say, I want to finish the article in Downbeat magazine, the jazz magazine, about the Gramzu era and some other things that Frank said that we didn't get to. So,
I think his idea of the cosmic debris and the Mr. Man actually link to the Grand Wazoo and what most people now talk about, all these conspiracy stuff.
Yes.
Because everybody has this idea that what we perceive as reality is somehow manipulated, and the science, the quantum physics show that the observer somehow defines what is real. Nothing really exists until there is an observer.
Now, that's what I would say. We create our experience. So LaRouche would come along and say, those guys back there at the Solvay Conference in 1927 in Copenhagen, I think it was, they're just theosophists and occultists and Fabian socialists. He would name off all the influences in British intelligence. And they're just injecting that occult nonsense into modern physics. And what's interesting is that they probably were putting in yin-yang knowledge in their physics, but it doesn't mean that it was wrong the way LaRouche says it is. But once we have the perspective of Ion, it's you can forgive anybody doing whatever trivial little propaganda they're trying to make in their science or art, because it unfolds to a larger thing. What?
There is like a flip.
Yes.
Science becomes the big fraud, and the mystery landscape is actually proven to be
real.
Real. And there are all these creations shown by Ion where they show as like the castles and that this very complex system of things that really have a logic, the Nostradamus prophecies, the Finnegan's Wake, and the Bible. All these things that Ion and you have been presenting and talking about at the beginning is like, what are they talking about? It's so, such a wide range of information. But then when you start studying these different things, they all start making sense, and you start seeing the message of the medium.
Of the medium, right.
From the Genesis.
Yes.
To the non-physical. And it's really impressive.
So,
you are not only the big Wazoo, but the Mr. Man.
Yeah, we're presenting the new song that Zappa was reaching for.
Yes.
Yeah, the new song. Augustine Lesage does this. There are not too many painters who were mediums and were around for people to study and test. He's pretty unique that way, correct?
Yeah.
And we didn't even know about him last week. This is something we've acquired over the past 7 days, and it is pretty interesting phenomenon.
Actually, for example, all the surrealists knew about him.
Yeah.
And that's why they retrieved the automatic writing and some of these.
You mean Lesage inspired their automatic writing attempts?
Yes, they knew about this.
Right. That's amazing.
Non-rational phenomenon.
Yeah, non-rational. Yeah.
And they wanted to explore this landscape. Breton retrieve the automatic writing of the Spiritism.
Yeah.
And, trying to reconnect to the non-physical, but of course they didn't know. But as McLuhan says, the artists, without knowing, are already presenting these things in their work, like Zappa trying to do faster, more complex music that could not even be played by musicians. He had to go to the thin clavier. And it's like, why would composers want to make faster, faster, complex, complex music? Because everything is speeding up, and in a way he was showing
what they're going to be forced to do.
Step.
Yeah, so when he
McLuhan also said the information we get, like maybe in a week, is what people maybe had their whole life before. What we have to digest in one day.
They got one life.
Something that maybe people before will know about in their whole lives. And this is speeding up of digesting all this information.
Now, one thing about that, if you clarify, there's no point in seeing every bit of information that happens. And nobody takes in all the information. So the people before the printing press, they had very lively, active sensory lives, but they weren't processing visual data, alphabetic data, and that stuff. And so the alphabetic data that we have, visual and digital data, is an acceleration of input. But what people live, what they live with their bodies today may be quite limited compared to how people live with their bodies before the printing press. They probably did go to parallel worlds. It was a lot more understood. But once you get into the effect of the book and you're studying all this content information, you then come to the electric age where it starts throwing the content information at you, and you don't know that the book itself has suppressed a whole right hemisphere access to anomalies. So we got to qualify about how we're different today. You could say that people live today, and if the brain takes in information, whether you know it or not, then they're processing a lot, but they're actually not noticing as much as someone 500 years ago who had a smaller environment to notice, but noticed it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you bring in that what's the change for the chemical body, what's the change for the chip body. So that's what I qualify what you're saying there about. McLuhan would say we live 200 years every 12 months. But it is more than just information processing. The fact you're on the phone and go somewhere else and that place comes to you, that's a different kind of experience. And you're doing that all the time. You can't even measure it almost, the number of times you...
Listen, and now we have the layer of the hyper-reality.
Yeah.
All these projections and holograms, the cyber reality mixing with the real, real, and what is the real, real.
Right.
So
I wanted to say this.
This other.
In light of what you said, Zappa went into the Saint Clavier, and most people thought it was ridiculous. Where's the human element? Doesn't he want to work with human beings? And you personally witness, 30 years later, all these young people, they wouldn't compose without...